Marshall and Sagar here. Welcome to the exclusive Realignment Supercast feed, where we do a bit of discussion, answer Q&A from folks who subscribe to the Supercast and all those other good things. I just want to say real quick, this is the last Supercast update we're going to post before renewal time after our 1 year anniversary of running on Supercast. I just want to start with a huge thank you to everyone who subscribed so far. Obviously, the realignment is supported at a foundational level by a grant from the Hewlett Foundation and the support of Lincoln Network, but having just actual supporters subscribe and like finance the show at a production level just really helps you keep that editorial independence. Like, obviously it's great to have Hewlett and Lincoln behind us, but at any point, if you just want a piece and do whatever you want, having that support there is huge. So huge thank you. And a reminder, we'll offer a bit of free discussion, but if you'd like the full access to this episode, you can go to realignment.supercast.com or click the link at the top of the show notes. So a couple of things I just want to start off with to open into for everyone. So number one, we're probably going to keep doing this more and more. Sagar, temperature check on the 2024 Republican primary after yesterday's Trump indictment hearing.
Yeah, primary, and I'm choosing my words carefully, Trump is stronger than ever. I said this on the show yesterday. I tweeted something about this, but I was watching the news and participating in the news during the Trump arrest. And I was like, this man is the only man that matters in America. Like, it's the Trump era. It started the day he came down the escalator. It'll end the day that he dies. How are you supposed to run against that? He's not even political. He's like metacultural at this point. Biden is the president, and he's the most irrelevant man in America on the day that Trump gets arrested. He literally was an afterthought during his own tenure in office. By the way, that's not even necessarily a dig. That's actually probably good for him because, you know, the more that he's a contrast with Trump, the better off he is. But again,
there's actually an article about this, how someone was basically saying the Biden team probably wants that to be the reality. Yeah. Their theory of the case is the more he's the story, the better for us.
They're right. I think they're right. So I'm not saying, you know, it's one of those everybody wins things. So I don't know how he could possibly.
Everyone wins except Ron DeSantis, what you're really saying.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, I've been skeptical of the meatball case from the very beginning. I've said that very publicly. A lot of the DeSantis stans have gotten very mad over the last several months, but I feel very vindicated in a lot of my political analysis around why I didn't think he ever had a shot in the first place.
Yeah. I said this to a group chat we're in, but because you and I, on 15 different levels, aren't looking to get political jobs in DC in 2025. We were in a DeSantis administration, obviously. We were just able to look at the DeSantis situation with clear eyes. The trend that I've just noticed is that a lot of the folks who are most invested in the idea of Ron DeSantis as someone who could win this primary are really people who I think want jobs. I think they're people who see themselves as very explicitly tied to the fate of the Republican Party. Because once again, if I were a Republican Party operative, I would look at 2024 and see Trump on the horizon and just be utterly terrified. I would say to myself, like, man, look at these midterm results. We'll talk about the Wisconsin Supreme Court race a little later. I would look at all those factors and just say, like, man, like Ron DeSantis and everything that's happening in Florida, if there's a future for the Republican Party, it's going to come via DeSantis and not Trump. But you and I are not Republican Party professionals, nor do we want jobs in 2025. So if you're just able to look at it separate from wanting anything, you're just like, oh yeah, like this guy can't beat Trump in a presidential contest. This is a guy, and we'll also talk about Florida in terms of migration. This is a guy who is governor of a successful state, who has faced a incredibly, actually mediocre would be generous, has faced a bottom tier Democratic Party for the past several years. When you remove him from that highly favorable environment and place him against Trump, there should be no expectation that those skill sets should translate to a dominance in the primary. And that's why his poll numbers are going down.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I mean, look, I'm not denigrating the man. I think he's I think by and large, like he seems to be pretty successful in Florida, but the age of that type of person being able to explode on the national scene, it just doesn't exist right now for the Republican primary base. They don't care about electability. They don't care about dynamism. They just care about Trump. And as long as they just care about Trump, then Trump is the only guy that matters. And the only reason, the only way that he could possibly win is if he was anointed by Trump, but he's not. So I just don't see it. I've never seen it. From day one, I've always said if Trump is not, if Trump is running, then he will be the nominee.
And this is the key thing I really want to emphasize for people, to your point about Republican voters not caring about electability. If the Republican Party were the Democratic Party, in terms of the assumptions and driving forces, yeah, Ron DeSantis would be the nominee. Let's say if, but the better example of like the domineering personality. So Barack Obama is just like the uber talented politician of his political generation. But imagine a world where Barack Obama in 2016 was in the Trump role. So he wins the presidency, but he doesn't actually win the popular vote. He has a bad midterms in 2018. He loses in 2020. And then he also has a bad 2022 midterms, which are tied to him very directly. He would just not be the nominee. It would be very straightforward for basically every other Democrat to come out and say, like, look, guys, the only reason why we are a coherent political party is because we are a coalition of various groups who want political power. We are less invested in the individual personality if that personality cannot translate the win. At a deeper level, the Republican Party is just different. The Republican Party is the embodiment of the conservative movement, which in many ways isn't just a political movement, but it's a sociocultural movement. Trump is the leader of that movement, win or lose. And in fact, there are quite a few number of people who would even say to me, like, Marshall, he didn't actually even lose in the first place. So that's just a key difference here. And there just has to be a level of talent that would be able to subsume above that. And DeSantis at this point clearly doesn't have that.
Here's the other interesting thing. Obama, if he was running today, he would not be the Democratic nominee after the way that they've changed the primary schedule. So the fact that South Carolina is likely to be the first in the nation at a primary level and that Super Tuesday was elevated over New Hampshire and Iowa, I don't think people remember. Obama was not leading in the state of South Carolina until he won Iowa. Obama was only able to win Iowa because he spent 2 years and tens of millions of dollars, along with a lot of white progressive volunteers canvassing the entire state. It was only after Obama won Iowa that he surged over Hillary and was able to surpass the Clinton love of the South Carolina primary base, even though Hillary did win in New Hampshire. So the fact that we've put South Carolina as first in the nation now, or very likely to be first in the nation now, and have removed the primacy of New Hampshire and of Iowa, I just think that it changes the entire game. You know, the way in which smaller candidates were able to, I mean, even Bill Clinton, for example, Bill Clinton would not be president under the current schedule. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Clinton got beaten in Iowa dramatically. He went all in New Hampshire, and he got third, which is funny because we don't even really think of third as good. But he gave
comeback
a famous speech.
Kid.
Yeah, he was a comeback kid. Paul, what was that guy? It's Tsongas.
Paul Tsongas.
These people are irrelevant today. But anyway, so it was like Paul Tsongas, I think, is the one who beat him. But he gave this famous speech where not only was he the comeback kid by the media, but he said, you know, I'll be with you till the last dog dies. And everyone's like, oh, that's an interesting guy. And it's a different media environment, of course. And he ends up getting the nomination in the New York primary months later. It was actually still a pretty long battle. The point that I'm making is that the calendar does matter here as well. So anyway, though, everything is just different today. And with the Republicans, you know, Iowa, I've seen some head-to-head polls where DeSantis is having a showing, but those are fake. There's no head-to-head with Nikki Haley in the race. For example, okay, Ted Cruz would have beat Trump head-to-head in Iowa in 2016, but he wasn't head-to-head with Trump. So, like, why are we even talking about that? It actually doesn't matter. What matters is the primary system that we have, and it's not going to change. And in that system, I think Trump is invincible.
Yeah, that's just the key thing. I'm going to do a post about this later, but I just think the way we're going to take a step back and write this political era is we're just going to say, hey, EOD, we had a lost generation where there were just these, you know, three big people, Obama, Biden, Trump, who just blotted out the competition. So during the Obama presidency, you had a just generation of Democratic politicians either like not rise or get knocked out in those bad midterms in 2010 and 2014. Under Trump, obviously, you saw two And I think we're just going to say that we're going to see this. We're going to see two primaries in a row where the new generation, quote unquote, just isn't up to the task of beating him. And then with Joe Biden, you had him obviously beat a very, very deep Democratic field in 2020. It's just about these three individuals. And at the end of the day, we're not going to move on past this moment until, to your point, people start dying or just leave the political system. Yep. One quick question I'll ask for you real quick. I did an episode with Henry Olson that should be coming out I'm sort of deciding which episode I'm going to post first, but it may have come out this week or it's coming out next week. Henry said that if Trump loses in 2024, he will be done, obviously, because he won't be able to run for president again. Which is true. Which he won't run for president again. But
Define done.
And that's I'd love for you to define done, because that's actually helpful, because the actual take is, even if he loses, I still think in low turnout primaries, he's going to be angry. He's going to drop endorsements. So define done from a Trump perspective.
Yeah, I don't think you can define done. You know, I was thinking about this. You know, Trump is the most popular figure amongst Republicans since Reagan. And I think we were actually robbed of an alternate history because Reagan, frankly, got Alzheimer's and got too old to insert himself in the political
process. Retired from politics. Explicitly.
I was going to say, and actually, he was more of a dignified individual. So he was one of those people who was like, look, he never particularly liked George H.W. Bush, but he was like, whatever, I'll let the guy be president. I'll keep my mouth shut. I'm going to go hang out in California. Basically, he lost his mind and, retired, sailed off into the sunset. But what if he hadn't? You know, that's one of those where we have no idea what that would look like. Here's the truth. If Reagan had come out and be like, I don't like George H.W. Bush, George H.W. Bush would have lost the 1988 presidential primary, hands down, no questions asked. And if he had inserted himself in, he never liked Dan Quayle either. If he'd inserted himself in 92 and he said, look, he's like, we're done with George. We're going with another. Everything would have changed. And so it's basically like if Reagan was, you know, if you take Reagan's popularity and take away the actions that he ultimately... Now, look, I actually think Reagan did the right thing from a politician's perspective, but Trump doesn't care about the right thing. He's just going to do whatever he does. There is no done. I mean, look, I guess really what you should pray for is that Trump goes the Reagan way and like gets dementia. Like that's all you really would want. Or, I mean, honestly, or he just dies. Like that's the only time that it ends. I think as long as he's mentally with it, quote unquote, then you're stuck with him no matter what.
Yeah. And there's a world where we're pushing this into the 2030s. So good luck if you are a Republican politician trying to navigate this, because it just seems like this is actually the in Star Trek, they have this thing called the Kobayashi Maru, which is this like no win scenario where it's basically just it's in Starfleet Academy. And the idea is you just can't win. And how do you basically navigate a situation where you can't win? James T. Kirk beats it through cheating. In this case, there is no cheating. Like this just seems to actually be a no-win scenario. No matter how talented you are, no matter how many levels of 5D, 10G chess you play, Trump is just so much above you on 15 different levels that you kind of have to move on from that. So, okay. Mm-hmm. So now we are going to get into the subscriber only section. Once again, if you are not subscribed to the Realignment, go to realignment.supercast.com or click the link at the top of the show notes to get access to this full episode. We do these every 2 weeks.